Our next speaker is Dr. Heather Jassine from Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and she's going to talk about the advent of 68 gallium scanning and PRRT for neuroendocrine tumors in the U.S.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me this morning. These are my disclosures. I want to start by introducing the concept of theranostics, and this is the coupling of a diagnostic imaging agent with a therapeutic drug for specific tumor targeting. In a schematic, it looks something like this. There's a patient population. Some of these patients have an actionable target. You can do an imaging test, and that imaging test will tell you whether your target is present or not in order to triage patients to treatment A or treatment B. This is not new in nuclear medicine. We've been doing this since the 1950s with radioactive iodine. In 1994, indium-111 pentatriatide, or octreoscan, became available for somatostatin receptor scintigraphy. And this could then be paired, Dr. Kolge just showed a much earlier date for octreotide, but this could then be paired with octreotide to say whether a patient would be eligible or the target is present for unlabeled octreotide therapy. Over the years, somatostatin receptor scintigraphy has improved. The agent octreoscan is very specific for the target. However, it often lacks anatomic localization and resolution. So oftentimes you're left with an image that looks like this. This is a normal spleen, the liver, the kidneys. In the center here, there's some uptake, which is abnormal, but this is very hard to localize. This could be in the duodenum, it could be in the pancreas, it could be a lymph node. And then on this image here, there's some faint uptake in the mediastinum, but again, very hard to localize. We now have hybrid cameras, SPECT CT, which gave us the ability to localize these lesions. At first, not so well. They were very low-dose CT scans. You were able to use this as a roadmap to often go and then look at a higher resolution scan, but better than just planar images. And now that these cameras have diagnostic quality CT scans, you can see that this uptake correlated with metastatic lymphadenopathy in the chest. And this was for planar and SPECT CT imaging. We have in the United States, however, lagged behind colleagues outside who have been using PET agents for many years to image the somatostatin receptor. These are the gallium-labeled DOTATOC, DOTANOC, and DOTATATE agents. About a year and a half ago, DOTATATE was FDA approved in the United States. And here you can see that the affinity for primarily the somatostatin receptor type 2 is much better than the other agents, and in particularly what we had available in the United States, the octreoscan. And so I consulted one of my surgical colleagues on what he thought might be the most interesting questions that I could help answer for you during this session. And so this is what we came up with. So first, is octreoscan obsolete? When to order DOTATATE preoperatively? How to interpret small incidental lesions? How to incorporate scans into surveillance? And then I'll talk about the place of PRRT in the management of widespread disease. I'm going to tackle the first two together. So gallium DOTATATE has better detection and accuracy than octreoscan. The first two studies were retrospective and were a little biased. They included patients with negative or equivocal octreoscan or those with limited disease. And in a majority of the patients, the DOTATATE scan was able to find lesions where the indium scan was not able to, and those were negative. The DEPEN study was a prospective study in patients with biopsy-proven neuroendocrine tumor, and here patients had both an indium scan and a gallium scan performed within several months of each other. The sensitivity of the gallium scan was higher than the indium octreoscan, and with similar specificities. And then a meta-analysis of 10 studies showed that the DOTATATE scan had a sensitivity and specificity around the 90% range. And this is an example of a patient that we saw, a 50-year-old man who came to the ER with abdominal pain. He had a CT scan that showed a liver mass and eventually ended up with an octrea scan. Here, there was the lesion in the liver. You could see taking up the somatostatin receptor agent. If you squint super hard, perhaps you can see this really faint, fuzzy thing that looks no different than the liver. And this patient went on. So on the axial image, this was the abnormal activity outside the liver, and then this fused somewhere in the region of the duodenum. The same patient underwent a gallium dotatate PET CT. Here on the MIP image, you can see the much higher resolution. You can clearly see the liver lesion. There's now a clear focus of activity, which actually was related to the small nodule near the duodenum here. This turned out to be its primary tumor. In addition, what you didn't see on the octrea scan was another focus of activity that's fused to about a 4 or 5 millimeter lymph node anterior to the duodenum right here. So this shows the difference in the two imaging techniques. Importantly, these studies also looked how gallium dotatate changed patient management. In the first study, the percent change was fairly large, 71%, but in a large part, this was due to the detection of disease by the gallium scan that enabled patients to be eligible for PRRT. In the other studies, the rates of percent change were around the 36-53% range, and that was the changes in management were between surgery versus systemic or PRRT, and also intramodality changes. This was a prospective study done of 131 patients who had a neuroendocrine tumor suspected biochemically. They also had familial predisposition. Here, this is a lesion analysis was done, which we don't really like lesion analyses too much because they bias the numbers a lot. You can see that the gallium scan detected many more lesions than the octrea scan, as well as CT or MRI. The gallium scan found 4 out of 14 unknown primaries versus none from the octrea scan, 2 from the CT MRI. And importantly, there were 37 of the patients had discordant results between the three imaging modalities. And of those, the dotatate found more of the lesions are positive and changed the management in those patients. And then here, I'm not going to go into the details of this slide, but the patients who had the gallium scan, there was about patients had gallium scans and some did not have without the gallium scan, but about a third of patients, there was a management change made based on the gallium scan. And there were several other studies which also showed the management change about the same range. This is an example of a patient who had an indium, had liver lesions seen on CT and MR. The octrea scan was negative. You can barely see the primary here. On the dotatate scan, you can see focal uptake within the liver, many lesions. This is just a normal pituitary gland, another small lymph node, but this patient was now eligible for PRRT therapy. This is another example of a patient on the slide A here, a negative octrea scan. This patient was found to have multiple bone metastases, which were not seen on CT as well, confirmed on MRI. So again, a negative octrea scan excluding them from PRRT. Now they've become eligible. In addition to being more accurate, gallium dotatate PET CT is more convenient. An octrea scan is performed over 2 to 3 days. You come for an injection and then you may have images at 24 and 48 hours. A gallium dotatate scan is you are injected and you're done in about 40 to 90 minutes. So it's more convenient for the patient, decreasing the appointment time. The gallium dotatate scan also has a total body radiation exposure that is less than the octreotide scan due to the different half-lives of the indium and the gallium agents. So is octrea scan obsolete? I would say yes. It's now the new standard of care for imaging. It's better, more accurate. It changes patient management. It's more convenient. It has a lower radiation exposure. And it ends up, if you do the analysis, it ends up being cost neutral. The times that we're not using dotatate now is really when insurance is not covering the dotatate scan. When do you order the gallium dotatate scan? As now we have increased sensitivity, and I'll talk about small lesions in a minute because that adds another dimension. But essentially, if you look through the NCCN guidelines, there are not additional indications for imaging. However, most of the places where you would seem to order an Octrea scan in the past, now the preferred test is the gallium dotatate PET CT. So how to interpret small incidental lesions, which raises a lot of interesting conversations at tumor boards. This is an example of a patient who had an ileal carcinoid post-right hemicolectomy, had a dotatate scan following that, and these small nodules were seen adjacent to the bowel on the dotatate scan. These were not very hard to see on CT, not more than several millimeters. The conversation was should he go back to surgery to resect these? Part of the conversation at the tumor board was that the surgeon usually runs the bowel during this, and we just heard earlier that about 13% of the time you might have a lesion that's not palpable or not able to be seen. And so these are potentially some of those lesions, and this patient's going to be followed, but these are the types of questions that I don't think we actually have the answer to about what to do with these small lesions. A gamma probe or a beta probe in the operating room might certainly be able to help find some of these smaller lesions. We also have found very small single bone metastases in patients on the dotatate scan. A patient with one or two, I believe that these lesions are most likely real on the imaging studies. It's just how does that affect the overall outcome for the patients is unknown, and I think a good opportunity for some study. This is another patient who had an appendiceal carcinoid. This patient, actually, the tumor was less than 2 centimeters, but she ended up having a dotatate scan performed at an outside institution. And surprisingly, a small liver lesion metastasis was found and a lymph node outside of the liver. Ordinarily, this person might not typically be scanned. You wouldn't know about these lesions and she would be followed. But now we have these small metastases, which are likely truly there, but how they're going to behave over the course of her life or disease is really unknown. But again, these small lesions raising a lot of interesting questions on how to follow up patients and if there are subgroups of patients in what we normally or how we are typically are in the past thinking about these diseases. How to incorporate scans into surveillance? I think this is a question that is not really known yet. Looking at using gallium dotatate for looking at response assessment or follow-up, there's a paucity of data in these settings. We don't really understand the role of SUV for gallium dotatate scans like we do for FDG. We know with FDG that provides prognostic information, but also you can follow that over time, and decreasing FDG uptake is usually something that is very good. Whether that is true with dotatate is unknown. There are some early studies looking at the influence of unlabeled octreotide and lanreotide treatment on how this affects the normal biodistribution of the gallium dotatate. One study showed that the normal organs decrease, whereas the tumor doesn't change, and so how that affects the bioavailability of the tracer is interesting. And I think so far in response to follow-up that if you're suspecting recurrent disease or worried about a change in tumor biology, these are reasonable indications to consider a dotatate scan, and they're really the same indications that you might do an Octrea scan or other types of imaging. So the place of PRRT in the management of widespread disease. I didn't include a slide, but I think Dr. Kolke's slide of the fireworks was a good representation of PRRT. Essentially, PRRT is the octreotide molecule with radioactivity attached to it. The PRRT molecule that's available in the United States is attached to lutetium. It's essentially the same drug as the gallium dotatate. It's just a different type of radiation. The gallium emits gamma emissions, which lets us do the imaging, whereas the lutetium has gammas and betas, and the betas are what allows the treatment of the tumors to happen. There's a high energy that's deposited locally that can kill tumor cells. That's called the crossfire effect. And this was the NETTER-1 study, which we saw several times, and patients were randomized to lutetium dotatate plus octreotide or octreotide alone. And These were the results, which showed the this improved progression-free and overall survival for the group who had dotatate, the PRRT, compared to octreotide alone. This is an important study in molecular imaging. We have other radionuclide therapies that have been used for many years. Some have not done terribly well out in the clinic, and that's because of a lack of studies like the NETTER-1 study, where there was clear randomization and large enough to show a difference in the overall survival of patients. When to use PRRT, the labeled indication is somatostatin receptor positive gastroenteropancreatic neuroendocrine tumors. The label was a little bit broader than what was evaluated in the NETTER-1 study. That was midgut tumors. This included both foregut and hindgut tumors. Generally, low or intermediate grade tumors. Patients need to have adequate bone marrow, renal, and hepatic function. The sequence of when to use PRRT in general, we are using it after people progress on lanreotide, and also in people who have unresectable advanced disease or distant metastasis, can also be considered for pheochromocytoma. And I'm going to show you a few examples. Some of the cases we've seen in our tumor board have been fairly straightforward, where patients have either a small volume of disease. This is a dotatate scan, small volume, somatostatin receptor positive. This is a good indicate patient had good bone marrow and hepatic and renal function, so went on to receive therapy. A 50-year-old patient with a thymic tumor, patient had a lot of somatostatin receptor expression in a majority of the patient's disease, so we decided that he was going to receive PRRT. But off of clinical trial, we're seeing a lot of other interesting things with gallium dotatate. This is the case of a 50-year-old woman with a PNET, and she had received multiple therapies over many, many years. And generally, when we think about these neuroendocrine tumors, we think of the specific tracer, the dotatate or the octrea scan, as being taken up by your well-differentiated tumors, very specific. As these tumors become higher grade or de-differentiated, they lose that expression, and they tend to be more FDG avid. But in this particular patient, she had almost every combination of tumor and an uptake within the various tumors. So she had lesions in the chest, which were both FDG and dotatate avid. She had lesions that were FDG avid, but not dotatate avid. She had a few that were also dotatate, but not FDG avid, which I haven't shown here. So the question becomes then, is she a candidate for PRRT? You think she has a lot of poorly differentiated disease, and she would not do well with the PRRT, but she also has somatostatin receptor expression. In fact, her disease that was both FDG and somatostatin receptor positive was progressing through chemotherapy. And the disease in the liver here, and this was a baseline, and then a year later, she had a lot of lymph nodes, which was positive on the dotatate scan. And this was causing her a lot of the symptoms at the time that we saw her. And so we decided that we were going to treat her with PRRT to try and attack the disease that was causing the symptoms at the time. And as part of our conversations, we almost tried to think of this a little bit, and we actually did use the term whack-a-mole, because in general, in nuclear medicine, or when we think about PRRT, we tend to think we think about it as an all-or-none situation. They have all their lesions are positive, we're going to use PRRT. But the reality of it is it's another arsenal in our toolbox, as Dr. Kolke laid out, that when you're thinking about the patients, not all lesions respond to chemotherapy, and we're also learning a lot of times people don't have FDG and gallium dotatate scans, so we don't know what the overlap of the expression of the somatostatin receptor is with FDG, and we're probably going to learn more now that we have these tools available. So just to conclude, I think that gallium dotatate PET CT is the standard of care for somatostatin receptor scintigraphy in the United States. There are a lot of opportunities to understand how this more sensitive imaging changes management and outcome, and how to look at tumor heterogeneity. PRRT is another option in the arsenal for systemic therapy. And really, the key is multidisciplinary teams, much like this session today, because that's how we're going to bring the best care to the patients. Thanks very much.
Okay, so we... We have 5 minutes for questions. We're going to ask the speakers to come up here and be happy to take any questions from the audience. Dr. Chi.
Yeah. I have a question for the panel. Taking into context the data behind cytoreduction or tumor reduction for metastatic neuroendocrine tumors, is there any benefit to cytoreducing nodal metastases? So, for example, we've all been in a situation where you have the metastatic disease to the root of the mesentery, and you have these nodes that are stuck down by the major vessels. I mean, are we doing any favors by, or is there any advantage to just debulking those nodal metastases and leaving tumor behind?
I think you have to be really careful of those things at the root, Dave, because a lot of those things, if you induce an SMV or SMA injury, you're going to compromise the whole bowel. We have lots of people where we will resect at the segmental vessels below that and leave that nodal metastasis in place, and they live 5-10 years, and sometimes they do develop metastatic disease, other times they don't. So, you know, the other question is like periaortic nodes and things like way in the retroperitoneum. I mean, it's hard to think that you're improving survival with that, but we do it when we see it preoperatively.
Right. I mean, just by the same, I'm just, like I said, in the context of where you're talking about 70% reduction within the liver disease, I mean, what if you can reduce the nodal burden by 70%? Is there a correlation, or can you extrapolate into that same
idea? I don't think anybody's looked at that.
Yeah. I don't think it's been studied.
Hi, Miyuki Tano from San Antonio. Thank you very much for the very informative talk. My question is, often a lot of insulinomas are not seen on a standard imaging and sometimes not even on EUS. So would, now that the gallium scan is so sensitive and specific, would that replace the calcium stim test? Or what would you do for a non-localized insulinoma?
So thank you for that question, Dr. Catano. We've looked at that, and you definitely could use dotatate. The calcium stimulation ends up still being more accurate. I believe it was 90% of the cases it detected the insulinoma, but not 100%, or regionalized it similar to calcium stimulation. So it might be a non-invasive way of localizing it. I don't know if Dr. Jassine has any experience with that.
No, I don't, but if there is... The dotatate is certainly better than the Octrea scan. So if you had a positive dotatate, you probably could feel pretty confident. If it's negative, maybe then you would do a more invasive test.
Osama Hamid from Jordan. My question to the panel, what's the experience of you have a lymph node positive disease and you just can't find the primary? So basically, did all the images that you have available, dotatate, MRI, CT scans, EUS, endoscopies, capsules, and you just can't find the primary, and you have an AVID lymph node that was discovered incidentally during another procedures. What would you do for these lymph nodes? It's a peripancreatic lymph nodes, but again, you can't find the primary.
Yeah, sure. So I think it depends a little bit where your lymph node is, right? So if you know a little bit on where your primary tumor is going to drain, for example, you find a lymph node in the mesentery, I think most likely you're going to have a small bowel tumor.
Oh, it's peripancreatic.
Right, a small bowel tumor. So even there, dotatate only detects a primary tumor about like 50% of cases. So for that particular case, you would explore and run the bowel. And you have 80 to 90% chance you'll find the primary tumor. Like peripancreatic is tricky. I have at least two or three patients that had peripancreatic lymphadenectomy, but the primary tumor was quote-unquote never found. The question in my mind sometimes is whether this was maybe a primary tumor that's laying on the pancreas and was thought to be a lymph node and was essentially shelled out. And I would say doing like intraop ultrasound, so explore these patients, do like intraop ultrasound, look everywhere you can, but sometimes you just can't find these primary tumors and you just have to surveil them. Do you have any...
Just you do the lymphadenectomies. You would do this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No question. Yeah. So if you don't have a primary tumor, but you have a peripancreatic lymph node, you explore these patients and you try to find a primary tumor. And even if you can, you do remove the lymph nodes. I think that's pretty clear.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question.
Dr. Billingsley.
I get to be the last one. Kevin Billingsley, Portland, Oregon. I'd like to thank the panel for really a great multidisciplinary presentation. My question is, what is the enthusiasm amongst all of you for resection in a patient with a pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor locally advanced without metastatic disease that would require a total pancreatectomy and complex vascular reconstruction for surgical management.
Rather not, but probably would do it if necessary. I mean, not a big fan of total pancreatectomy, but you know, I think there are times where it's indicated. What do you think, Electron?
Yeah, I think it's the comorbidities of the patient. Another thought is to consider neoadjuvant therapy in that setting. It's really underutilized, and you probably have a tissue diagnosis, so, but I would not hesitate if it was indicated, but I would consider neoadjuvant therapy. I'd be interested in seeing what Dr. Kalki has to say about that.
Exactly. Especially for pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, the TEM-CAPE regimen is really pretty active. So sometimes
he's had chem-tape for CAPE for a year with nice disease stability.
So then you might even think about Lutathera in this day and age, since you can get some responses there. But yeah, it's a very tough call. I could say I did it once, and I'm not sure if it was the right thing or not. The guy had brittle diabetes for years and years. It's just a tough call.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for your attention.